Profits. Their hosts are Dennis Lube, Matt Dillahunty, and Schilling. These people come to you live from the Dillahunty International Studios in Austin, Texas, on the 24th of May, 2008. Their music was No Escape from Heaven by Curve. They are sponsored by the Atheist Community of Austin, a nonprofit educational organization for the promotion of positive atheism and the separation of church and state. To learn more about them, the ACA, not the nonprofits, call the voicemail at 512-371-2911 or visit the webpage at www.atheist-community.org. These folks, again, the ACA and not the nonprofits per se, host a happy hour at the Dog and Duck at 7 o'clock on Thursdays in Austin, Texas. Their show broadcasts live every other Saturday from 2 to 3:30 Central Standard Time, at which point participation in the show is possible by following the directions at www.nonprofitsradio.com to the chat room. Sit back and listen to them.
Okay. You know, I occasionally I'll get like an email from somebody that's like, oh, you know, we just, you know, we love listening to your guys' show. You guys are so clever and funny and blah, blah, blah. And it seems like every week when you finish your announcement, I have nothing at all. I should like prepare some comment, you know.
You have no and special announcements?
And it was said.
It's third person intro there.
So how was everybody's 2 weeks?
Pretty good. Did a lot of artwork. It's about it. It's what I do.
Wow. I just mostly worked a lot. Work. You'll notice that the vivarium is still in exactly the same state it was two weeks ago.
I noticed that.
Well, not exactly.
But I wasn't going to mention it.
I carved out some more of the back, and the dirt's actually dry, so I can put it in there now. But last week was actually... the super weekend for me because it was the first time in I can't recall how many months. Well, I guess since I was unemployed that I had two straight days off with no obligations anywhere.
Ooh.
The TV studio was being rewired and reworked, so we had no TV show last week. We, of course, had no nonprofit show last week, so I had a Saturday and Sunday to myself, and it was freaking awesome.
Yes.
Speaking
we missed
of
that occasion.
No nonprofit show. Do we need to mention any schedule changes?
We are.
Going to be any? Okay.
That was the next thing I was going to say.
Yeah.
Okay.
So the next nonprofits is scheduled for June 7th.
Aha.
There will not be a nonprofit show that day. But there will be one the following week. So basically, instead of being back in 2 weeks, we'll be back in 3 weeks. On the 14th, and then we'll be back on a two-week schedule from there. So we're going to skip a week. Who knows? You may get another 2 weeks in a row sometime later in the year. But for now, we're going to go 3 weeks. We're going to do it the 14th and then the 28th. And the reason for that is Schilling can't be here on the 7th.
Ah.
And there's other stuff going on around that date. And then the 21st, which would have been the show after the 7th, is the ACA's solstice party, which starts at 3. You know, it would have been, I thought that it was scheduled for a day when there was no nonprofits, but I was mistaken. So,
yeah.
So we're going to shift a week.
We'll be choking on listener mail.
I know. There's going to be people who are, holy crap, 2 weeks is long enough. Why do you have to go three? Why couldn't you just done two in a row? And I thought about that. I thought about coming back next week.
It's nice to try tantric atheism now and then. Yeah. Make them wait and beg for it. And
it's the anticipation.
I find it hard enough to believe that people are really jonesing after, you know, 2 weeks.
They keep saying they are. I know. Their mail. It's staggering.
We appreciate it. But, you know, go back and listen to an old episode. Find some place we were wrong and correct us.
I assure everyone, this is completely unrehearsed. We're just shooting the breeze for an hour and a half.
Yeah, they can check out another podcast and get sort of an ideological methadone as a fix.
Well, the folks who like it, I mean, that's probably one of the most common things that people have said is, we like the fact that it's just a handful of guys sitting around talking, that, you know, it's not this, we've got a theme today and we're going to be discussing, you know. But it was nice. PZ Myers was on the last show as the special guest.
Mm-hmm.
And I have my feelers out.
That was awesome.
For other special guests. We probably won't do it too often because, you know, it's impractical. Unless we were to turn the show into a weekly thing and like have one week where we just talk and then another week when somebody comes on. But I shouldn't even have probably said that.
Right.
But we're not really considering that at the moment, but we'll see what happens. I liked having a guest on. The feedback was completely positive.
Oh, yeah.
I don't have the stats for the number of downloads for that show, so I can't verify if my prediction was true.
Yeah, but we got some people coming over from PZ's blog to check it out, and that was cool.
So we want to start with listener mail, or...
All right.
Don't know. Do we have any? Well, if you've got something you want to read, go for it.
Oh, I don't. You handed me all this, and I was gonna start at the top.
You can read that if you want to. Let's see if we got any news.
News, old news. No news is good news.
No news is good news.
No,
but
there's lots.
There's
of
actually
stuff going
some
on.
Good news here.
Shoot.
Well, you know, when they're always talking about the Christians always bring up Einstein.
Oh yes, my favorite is,
that comes up a lot. Was Albert Einstein?
No, that's not my favorite.
Oh, okay,
my favorite is the Einstein believed in God. Do you think you're smarter than Einstein?
Uh huh.
Well, okay, let's look at that for a second. First of all, whether or not I'm smarter than Einstein doesn't matter. But Einstein didn't actually believe in God in the way that the person saying that is right. normally talking about. And by the way, if it would be just as silly as if, you know, I said, well, Stephen Hawking doesn't believe in God. Do you think you're smarter than Stephen Hawking? I mean, smartness has nothing to do with it. But the answer, you know, the question is designed to make you appear arrogant. Presumptuous. Right. And the fact of the matter is that if Einstein had believed in a personal God, the Christian God that we're often harassed with, then in that particular area, yes, I am fucking smarter than Einstein. And I don't say that, you know, as, oh, look at me, look how cool I am. People make mistakes. Everybody make mistakes. The absurdity that you could have any one person who is, you know, I don't care how revered they are, how smart they are across the board, they can be wrong about a particular thing. And in that area, I would think I'm smarter than them.
Right. And if you don't feel like attacking them on a logical fallacy such as that, you can point out that a German language letter is being sold Thursday by Bloomsbury Auction in Mayfair after being in a private collection for more than 50 years. And it's a letter by Einstein, wherein he describes belief in God as childish superstition and said, the Jews are not the chosen people. Let's see here if we can get some of the quotes. The word God is for me nothing more than the expression and product of human weaknesses. The Bible is a collection of honorable but still primitive legends, which are nevertheless pretty childish. And so it's pretty straightforward. the Jewish, let's see, for me, the Jewish religion, like all others, is an incarnation of the most childish superstitions, he said. And the Jewish people, to whom I gladly belong, and with whose mentality I have a deep affinity, have no different quality for me than all other people. As far as my experience goes, they are no better than other human groups, although they are protected from the worst cancers by a lack of power. Otherwise, I cannot see anything chosen about them.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. There was a big stir about this, and, oh, you know, now we've got it, you know, in his own words. No, we already had it in his own words.
Right.
Right.
We had numerous quotations from different letters and messages. And then what do we get after this comes out? You get asshats like Dinesh D'Souza, published an edit. He writes for AO Hell in their little newsletter editorial section or whatever. And he's like, oh, but here's these other quotes from Einstein where he talks about God. And I'll be the first to admit, if all of those quotes are accurate, you have two potentially conflicting statements or views from Einstein.
Mm-hmm.
However, you could pull statements from me from different times in my life, and they would be conflicting.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Because we change. Once upon a time, I would have gladly told you that, you know, I'm washed in the blood. Jesus is my Lord. He's the Lord of the universe. He loves us all. He came and died for our sins, you know, and I believe all of that. And now I don't. But in Einstein's case, I don't think it's the same. I think what you're seeing is somebody who is talking about God in a time where, I mean, there's not only no reason to publicly state your atheism, it would have been a bad thing to do.
Right.
Potentially harmful. You know, it's not like he was in 21st century USA with freedom of speech. And, you know, it's also in a time when people didn't want the issue raised or discussed. It was, you know, it's a personal thing. What you believe is what you believe. So somebody who happens to be a non-believer or later becomes a non-believer at some point makes some comment that makes it look like they believe in God. Who cares? At the end of the day, I think if you analyze the statements from Einstein, and also there's a difference between his public comments and his private letters.
Oh, absolutely.
This is from a private letter. I think only a fool would claim that somebody's going to be less honest in a private letter to a friend than they are on the public forum. That's just the way we are. I'll say shit to Dennis that I'm not going to say on either show. It's not because I'm dishonest. It's because there are certain subjects that are personal. There are things that just aren't conducive to the conversation that we're trying to have on here. You know, and it's not a matter of being, you know, two-faced or duplicitous or anything. In Einstein's case, I think we have a pretty good understanding of where he stood based on these letters. And the other note that I'll bring up, which is the same thing I bring up when people talk about founding fathers and their beliefs, it doesn't matter. What Einstein believed or didn't believe about the existence of God has no bearing on whether or not the claim is true.
Right.
It has no bearing on whether or not you, as an individual, are justified in accepting the claim.
Right. It's just appeal to authority.
Yeah.
And there's also a lot to be said for his use of language to make ideas accessible. For example, you know, when he says God doesn't play dice, he's just using it to illustrate a point. If he had done that in a more direct way, then it would have been lost on a lot of the people. So, you know, saying something like God doesn't play dice gets the idea across.
And right. It was a rhetorical trick.
You know, and then a lot of the statements that he made referencing God, he later made very clear. There's a quote that I don't remember fully, but where he mentions that people misconstrued that. He doesn't believe in a personal God at all. And
it's on the wiki.
Yeah, it is. You know, when you have conflicting statements and one of them, you know, he has clarified, that removes any conflict at all.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, saying that that God doesn't play dice is better than saying the universe doesn't play dice, because you can't visualize the universe rolling dice, but you can visualize a guy in a long white beard with a couple of babes standing next to him breathing on dice in Vegas and rolling them on the table. You can visualize that.
And I am.
All right.
It's no more proof of what he believes than if you found an atheist who, you know, gets his thumb caught in the car door and says, Jesus Christ.
Yeah. That's right.
It's a use of a common expression to get an idea across.
Right. There's no reason that Christians should have the best curse words.
Yeah. Saying, oh, my God, does not mean I believe in a personal God.
Yeah. But. Yeah, I know. But we'll save your favorites for the pre-show today.
Yeah.
So I'm going to sidetrack for just a second.
Sidetrack.
I'm usually not. Or I usually try not to be too self-promotional. Yes. But I showed you guys this last show, after the show. There's a listener in Ireland who put together a video.
Oh, yes. The video.
It's called Dullahunty versus God. And I was... at first disturbed and and then laughed my ass off, and I had trouble. I didn't think I had this much of an ego, but I had trouble getting the song out of my head.
It's a catchy tune.
So for the regular listeners, I'm up on Facebook, and you can probably search for Matt Dullahunty. I don't care if you add me to your friends or whatever. But on my posted items, I've got a link to it. But the other thing you can do is go to YouTube, just do a search for Dullahunty, and the first video that pops up, and that's Dillahunty, and the first video that pops up is going to be Dullahunty versus God. And this is something that I love. This guy, it was great. This listener in Ireland put this video together.
Crazy.
And so I'm not being as promotional of me as of the work that he did on this, which I think was really cool.
So it's something of an antithesis to God Will Fuck You Up.
Yes.
Yeah.
And there's also the other video that he made with the phrase, only cavemen throw rocks at the moon, which is fantastic.
And I'm going to steal that for at least a chapter in the book, I think.
Cool.
It's just called Rocks at the Moon, but it's a cool song, and it's a great visual. But anyway, back to the news. So thanks to Jamie, by the way.
Yeah. Brad alerts us to the Vatican says aliens could exist. The Pope chief astronomer says that life on Mars cannot be ruled out. Writing in the Vatican newspaper, the astronomer Father Gabriel Funes said intelligent beings created by God could exist in outer space. The search for forms of extraterrestrial life, he says, does not contradict belief in God. The official Vatican newspaper headlines his article, Aliens Are My Brother. Just as these are multiple forms of life on Earth, so there could exist intelligent beings in outer space created by God. And some aliens could even be free from original sin, he speculates.
See, that's the point. Based on accepted Christian theology, they would have to be.
Because they weren't here, I guess.
Yeah, this is... The Bible, of course, it references... We could argue with some theists as to whether it references a flat earth and a square earth with four corners and a firmament, but...
There's a problem, though. If they come down, if they visit us and they're intelligent, how do beings who don't know the difference between good and evil or... whatever, how are they going to behave?
Who knows?
Who knows?
Well, if God created aliens, we don't know that he didn't create some sort of mythical produce to screw them, and they have their own set of original sin.
They have their own little original sin, yeah. Thank goodness they know the difference between good and evil. They may choose good and not destroy us.
Well, it could be. You're talking about... If you really look at what the God of the Bible does and advocates and supposedly can do, he creates humans and gives them free will, and of course they make a choice, and he says no, that's the wrong choice, and I'm going to punish you and everybody who comes after you forever because of it. But also he evidently created giants who came down and had sex with women, the other sons of God other than Jesus. And it doesn't, when they list off his characteristics, he's jealous and angry and, all this other stuff. And, of course, loving. He loves you. He'll kick your ass.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
He will fuck you up, but he loves you. But the thing is that what I was told, because this is a topic that came up while I was still a Christian, and I talked to different ministers about this, and I was like, you know, what about the possibility of life on other planets? And without fail, like they were all reading from the same fucking script, they came back with this, well, you know, if life on another planet exists, it must necessarily be perfect, because they could not have original sin, because Jesus was sent only once to die, and Jesus is God's only son. So either they never sinned, and therefore never needed redemption, and they are perfect, or they sinned, and God did not offer them redemption, mm-hmm. which means they're evil. Well, okay, thank you for covering all the fucking bases.
Or maybe...
Maybe Jesus God created them evil in the first place.
Maybe Jesus is the only Son of God that he sent here.
Ooh.
Well, and, you know, if he has multiple, you know, little alien colonies, it could be mm-hmm. that he's benevolent to most of them, and Earth is just his Job.
Right.
We are the example to scare the shit out of all of his preferred beings.
And, of course, then again, if the life he's talking about in outer space is just microbes, then this is all moot, you know.
I don't know. Microbes can kill.
However, he did include this. Asked about the Catholic Church's condemnation 4 centuries ago of the Italian astronomer and physicist Galileo, Father Funes diplomatically says, "Mistakes were made, but it is time to turn the page and look forward to the future."
I was about to say, Vatican wow. astronomer just sounds like you have to piss someone off to get that job. Uh-huh. Because you have to do a good job, but if you're too good, we'll set your ass on fire.
It's like, imagine, I'm the new Vatican astronomer, and he goes in for his, you know, secret little handshake session, and there's just a picture of Galileo sitting there with the most sullen-looking expression on his face.
Poor guy. Yeah.
This is what happened to you.
Mistakes were made.
We have ways of dealing with you.
But it happened in the past, so we can forget about it. We're all forgetting.
Anytime he makes his report to the official, he's just standing there flicking a lighter back and forth.
Yeah. Now, this next one's kind of interesting. Brad alerts us to this again and comments that this is pretty damn ironic, and I have to agree with him. Orthodox Jewish youths burn New Testaments in Israel. Jerusalem. Orthodox Jews set fire to hundreds of copies of the New Testament in the latest act of violence against Christian missionaries in the Holy Land. Or Yehuda, Deputy Mayor Uzi Akron said, missionaries recently entered a neighborhood in the predominantly religious town of 34,000 in central Israel, distributing hundreds of New Testaments and missionary material. After receiving complaints, Aaron said, he got into a loudspeaker car last Thursday and drove through the neighborhood, urging people to turn over the material to Jewish religious students who went door-to-door to collect it. The books were dumped into a pile and set alight in a lot near a synagogue, he said. The Israeli Marv Daily reported Thursday that hundreds of Jewish religious school students took part in the book burning, but Aaron told the Associated Press that only a few students were present and that he was not there when the books were torched. Not all of the Old Testaments that were collected were burned, but hundreds were, he said. He said he regretted the burning of the books, but called it a commandment to burn materials that urge Jews to convert. I certainly don't denounce the burning of the booklets, he said. I denounce those who distributed the booklets.
Why didn't you burn them?
Good point.
I mean, after all, the Bible tells you that if your wife comes to you and says, hey, let us go worship one of these other gods, your hand must be the first one on her to put her to death.
Right. Now, that's rules the Jews have to follow.
Oh, yeah.
Right? Yeah. That's Old Testament stuff.
It's odd that these Christian missionaries just distributed copies of the New Testament. You think if they're trying to convert Jews, they distribute full Bibles so that they have it both in one. And that's what I picture first.
So then they'd have to rip out, we're just going to burn this second half.
Yeah.
Chapter 2.
Yeah. What's that, the comedian, I forget his name, goes, that's our book. And that wasn't good enough for you, was it? No. Yes, Black. Yeah. He's great. You had to add a New Testament.
So, book burning is one of those things where once upon a time it would have offended me from the standpoint of, you're trying to suppress ideas. And that's because at one time it was effective.
Mm-hmm.
We lost vast amounts of knowledge thanks to the Vatican and its efforts to squelch opposition during the early, during the first few centuries CE. We lost the Library at Alexandria. We have no clue how much information we lost and had to relearn.
God, yeah.
And some of it that we may not have actually completely relearned. One of the things I saw, I'm watching a special from Nova, I think, on the Parthenon. Unfortunately, I keep putting it on when I'm exhausted, so I get like 5 minutes in and fall asleep. So it's taken me like, you know, a week to get through this thing. But looking at the stones and doing some research, they discovered that the Greeks had marble cutting tools that were more effective than, you know, we were able to produce, that remained sharper longer and were sturdier. Something about the way it was constructed. And I don't have the details, and you know, I'm reluctant to even mention that more. Somebody maybe knowing more than I will be able to offer information.
Yeah.
We've lost a lot of that. But now book burning, you can't suppress knowledge in that way anymore. Once, I mean, especially with the internet. I mean, maybe
it's hard to burn files.
It's spread so much with, you know, multiple copies and backups and everything else, that if you want to do a book burning, do something productive with it. Gather up all those books that people want to willingly give you to burn, and use them as fuel on trains or something. So don't just throw them in a pile on the street and waste all that energy. Put them to good use.
Heat something.
I mean, you know, it's destruction for the sake of destruction is just nonsensical.
Yeah, well gather to burn the books and have someone bring some cattle.
Right. Israeli authorities.
Yeah, have a barbecue. Oh, a Bible barbecue. Bible barbecue.
That should be an ACA event.
Yes. The Bible banquet guy on public access here in town, maybe we should invite him.
But I mean, at this point, book burning is just a tactless way of making a point.
It's really pointless symbolism.
Right. Well, Israeli authorities and Orthodox Jews frown on missionary activity aimed at Jews, though in most cases it is not illegal. Still, the concept of a Jew burning books is abhorrent to many in Israel because of the association with Nazi torching piles of Jewish books during the Holocaust of World War II.
Yeah,
it's just bad taste.
Yeah, you know, it doesn't bother me. If they want to go door to door and say, you know, hello, we are here for your copies of the New Testament to burn, and then burn them.
I just hope they weren't wearing brown shirts. So yeah.
When I lived around Dallas, this Jesus movie came out, I think, around 1999 or 2000. It's one of the prominent little videos that they used to send out. They mailed it to pretty much everybody in the entire city.
Mm-hmm.
And rather than do something like burning, someone went door to door and said, do you want that Jesus video? They collected all the ones that people didn't want. They put them in this huge bin and just dropped it off on the doorsteps of the church. And there's a lot to be said for things like book burning in the respect that it's not just, you know, someone hands you this and you don't want it, throwing it away. It's making the point to them that you don't want their crap. I think the way they did the book burning isn't the best way to make the argument, but it did get a point across that they don't want it.
Yeah, I like the idea of taking the church. I also like the idea that some of the college student secular organizations have done, which is turning your Bibles for porn.
Right, right.
I mean,
the atheist agenda down in San Antonio.
Yeah, I realize that not everybody has an appreciation or acceptance of porn, whether they're religious or not. I mean, there are plenty of people who find it degrading and offensive and, you know, abusive to women, I guess, or whatever.
Prudes.
I don't want to go that far because I think some of them
just don't have an appreciation.
Have good reasons. You know, we've had arguments before within ACA group about, you know, whether or not prostitution should be legal, you know, whether or not establishments, strip clubs and whatever. They're exploiting women. Let me tell you, I've been to strip clubs. It's not the women who are being exploited in the strip club.
Good point.
Their wallets get fat. They are safe. I think that, you know, if we end up having the discussion about prostitution, the best argument you could make is that it's going to happen either way. We should use strip clubs as an example and legal brothels in, like, Vegas, right, and other countries as an example of how to turn this industry, which is going to happen anyway, into something that is safe and non-exploitive. I mean, you go to what I end up, you know, somebody will say, well, if you go to a brothel and talk to one of the prostitutes, most of them will say, hey, you know, this is what I want to do. I'm making good money, cool, blah, blah, blah. And the answer you get, and this comes from religious people and non-religious people, anyone who's opposed is, well, those women are lying. They're so,
they don't know,
so abused better, that they don't know any better. How dare you be so arrogant and condescending that a free-thinking person who's not hurting anybody, who's making a living, and tells you that they're happy, how dare you just call them a liar?
Just contradict them.
Because their view of right and wrong, their view of life and happiness doesn't match yours. You know, if somebody tells me they're happy, congratulations. I'm glad you're happy. As long as you're not hurting anybody else, cool. But I didn't mean to get up on the whole.
You know, I mean, if you're not going to, you know, I will believe you when you tell me you believe in God, no matter how difficult I find that to, you know, comprehend. Right. You know, grant them the same,
well,
courtesy.
The problem is, if they say
they're happy, believe them.
The problem is that there are examples of people who will tell you, oh, I'm happy and this is wonderful, when they aren't.
Well, out of fear?
Yeah. And it's kind of cult-like in training. You see this in with women in abusive relationships where, you know, despite being beaten, they just love him so much that they don't want to turn him in and they don't want to leave him.
Yeah, yeah.
But those are types of things that I think we can analyze psychologically.
Right.
And
I don't think...
And it's not just a simplistic comparison to the norm.
And I don't think we're talking about the pimp and his hose.
Yeah.
We're not talking about that kind of situation there.
I mean, you know...
That is exploitative.
Yes.
You know, get the girls hooked on drugs and then use them up.
Yeah.
You know, that's...
I've always been opposed to that. But anyway, we didn't mean to get this off on.
Yeah.
We didn't mean
to get
off.
Kind of weird.
So what else have you got?
Well, 16% of U.S. science teachers are creationists.
How many percent?
16. Despite a court-ordered ban on the teaching of creationism in U.S. schools, about 1 in 8 high school biology teachers still teach it as a valid science, a survey reveals. And although almost all teachers also taught evolution, those with less training in science, and especially evolutionary biology, tend to devote less class time to Darwinian principles. U.S. courts have repeatedly decreed that creationism and intelligent design are religion, but not science, and have no place in school science classrooms. But no matter what courts and school boards decree, it is up to teachers to put the curriculum into practice.
I have some question about that, because the 16% of teachers, or is it specifically biology teachers? Because the 1 in 8 figure matches too closely.
Well,
you'd think that there would be a difference between what biology teachers believe and what teachers on the whole believe.
Well, the researchers polled a random sample of nearly 2,000 high school science teachers across the U.S. in 2007. Of the 939 who responded, 2% said they did not cover evolution at all, with the majority spending between 3 and 10 classroom hours on the subject. However, a quarter of the teachers also reported spending at least some time teaching about creationism or intelligent design. Of these 48%, about 12.5% of the total survey said they taught it as a valid scientific alternative to Darwinian explanations for the origin of species. People should be fired.
Yeah.
As far as I'm concerned.
So it's much worse than the headline would lead you to believe.
Yeah, they're actually teaching it. They're
creationism. Also just that it's science teachers. It's not just teachers on a whole.
Yeah.
I mean, 16% of teachers on the whole, that's fine.
Oh, yeah,
a lot
of
those,
these are science teachers in high schools.
You would think, oh, well, a lot of them are teaching literature or, you know, something along those lines. So
the title actually says 16% of U.S. science teachers.
Okay, I misheard then.
Yeah, it seems a bit high, but I am not shocked by it, says Linda Forshauer, past president of the National Science Teachers Association based in Arlington, Virginia. We do know there's a problem out there, and this gives more credibility to the issue. When Berkman's team asked about the teachers' personal beliefs, about the same number, 16% of the total, said they believed human beings had been created by God within the last 10,000 years. Teachers who subscribe to these young Earth creationist views, perhaps not surprisingly, spent 35% fewer hours teaching evolution than other teachers, the survey revealed.
Go figure.
The survey also showed that teachers who had taken more science courses themselves, and especially those who had taken a course in evolutionary biology, devoted more class time to evolution than teachers with weaker science backgrounds.
I don't know if they could have weaker science backgrounds.
Right.
Yep. That's here in the United States. Thought we were over that crap.
I
thought the court said no.
Well, the court
in Dover did. Cares.
The court in Dover did, but that only applies to Dover. That's the problem.
Christ.
You know, and not to get overly political, but we have a couple of Supreme Court justices who are on the verge. And who gets elected president this next round? Maybe the most critical decision that happens over the course of the next 60, 70 years. Let's maybe 40, 50 years. Because if, and I don't, I'll just,
it's an ugly situation.
We're treading in dangerous territory. One of the candidates has openly stated that he wants to put clones of Scalia and Roberts and Alito on the bench. To me, that's about the worst thing that could happen. Mm-hmm. And no matter what my – this particular issue is one that's so important that no matter what my views were in other areas, this would overshadow it.
Right,
on
everything.
It would overshadow most things. I mean, there are – I don't know that there's that much difference in the other areas, to be critical. The problem is that the other options, the other candidates, haven't been quite so explicit about
what they intend
what
to
type
do.
Of person they would put on the Supreme Court bench.
Yeah.
So I'm more than a little nervous. I'm going to make the best decision I can, and I'm sure everybody else will. And please, you know, vote your conscience, but vote, unless you're voting against who I want to win, and then stay home.
Right. It's not all over here. In England, a teenager faces prosecution for calling Scientology a cult. Whereas most people would say, well, duh. Apparently over there it's hate speech. A teenager is facing prosecution for using the word cult to describe the Church of Scientology. The unnamed 15-year-old was served the summons by City of London police when he took part in a peaceful demonstration opposite the London headquarters of the controversial religion.
Ah, is this another one of the anonymous protests?
It could be. Officers confiscated a placard with the word cult on it from the youth, who is under 18, and a case file has been sent to the Crown Prosecution Service. The decision to issue the summons has angered human rights activists and support groups for the victims of cults. Well, yeah, you would expect.
Hey, here's a thought. I'm not up on UK law, and I know we have listeners in the UK, so maybe even some solicitors among them, but or barristers or whatever the fuck. You guys have the strangest words. How did you pervert the English language so far from its American fucking roots? No, I'm kidding. I loved my time in the UK, and I'd like to go back. But if anybody over there has more insight in the legal aspects of this, let me know. Because from my point of view, this is insane.
Yeah.
The fact of the matter is, and Church of Scientology, SP Group, please pay attention now. Scientology is a fucking cult.
Absolutely.
I don't know that I'd agree.
And you know what? So is Mormonism. Lutherans, Baptists,
Catholicism,
Catholics,
everything.
They're all cults. Cult is just the pejorative label that big churches put on little churches.
Yeah.
Now, are they all dangerous cults? In the broad scheme, yes, actually, they are.
Yeah.
Do they all use the exact same tactics with regard to the individual?
Variations.
Not exactly the same.
Yeah, pretty much.
Some of them prohibit you from maintaining contact with people outside
no
the cult.
No fraternization.
Some discourage you.
Uh-huh.
And some do the exact same thing in a slightly more crafty way. They just encourage you to spend more time with other believers. Hello, Christians. Let's go to church Sunday morning, Sunday night, Monday night, Wednesday night. Let's have morning prayer brunches, evening study groups, Bible study groups, church socials, church softball teams, church basketball teams.
Yep. Let's make all our social events insular.
Yes, because the more we have and the more fun we are, the more time people are spending with us, and then we don't have to say don't spend so much time with your family and whatever else. So they're not all doing it to the same degree.
I can't see anything wrong with that, though.
I didn't say that that was necessarily wrong.
Well, it's one of those things where the line I draw with cult is how separatist they are. Now, if you're just advocating, don't talk to the outside people. If you're just, you know, telling people to read Christian books or, you know, read this book, don't read these books. I see no flaw there. It's in communities like the Amish or some of these FLDS compounds where they're cutting themselves off and denying access to information. That's where I see a big problem. When they're just trying to influence you and they're not actually cutting off your access to information, not a huge deal there. Because the ACA offers a lot of the same kind of things.
I'm not saying that they're equivalent.
Right.
I'm saying they accomplish similar goals using different methods.
Right.
Some of them are obviously more harmful than others.
Mm-hmm.
But by the original definition of cult, they all qualify.
Right.
You know, now, if we're talking about specific harmful cults, if obviously this is listed as hate crime, then we're talking about cult in the derogatory or pejorative sense. And in that case, however, I think Scientology still qualifies.
Yeah.
I think one of the problems they're going to have is whether they can prove that cult is pejorative.
Right.
That may be. And like I said, I'm not up on UK
law.
But
what I find amusing in this story is the way it was resolved, or not resolved, but the instigation was even kind of strangely polite.
Well, it's Great Britain.
Yes. Within 5 minutes of arriving, I was told by a member of the police that I was not allowed to use that word and that the final decision would be made by the inspector. A policewoman later read him Section 5 of the Public Order Act and strongly advised him to remove the sign. The section prohibits signs which have representations of words that are threatening, abusive, or insulting. The teenager refused to back down, quoting a 1984 High Court ruling from Mr. Justice Lately, in which he described the Church of Scientology as a cult which was corrupt, sinister, and dangerous. After the exchange, a policewoman handed him a court summons and removed his sign. And I'm going, wow, you know, you exchange, she reads you the law, and you read back to her a court decision by a judge. I mean, wow, in the U.S. it's just a big shouting match, but over there they actually have reasoned discourse.
However, despite the reasoned discourse,
mm-hmm.
They took his sign away. They put a halt to the protest. Now, in this case, I think you kind of have to. I mean, it's kind of like, you know, setting an injunction. We can't allow this to continue until we make a decision about whether or not it should be allowed to continue.
Right.
But in Scientology's case, it's already been proclaimed a cult by a good chunk of Europe. It's banned.
Yeah. Well, Liberty director Shami Chakrabarty said, "This barmy prosecution makes a mockery of Britain's free speech traditions. After criminalizing the use of the word cult, perhaps the next step is to ban the words war and tax from peaceful demonstrations." Now, at the end of this story, there's some interesting and disturbing bits of information.
No.
The City of London Police came under fire 2 years ago when it emerged that more than 20 officers, ranging from constable to chief superintendent, had accepted gifts worth thousands of pounds from the Church of Scientology. The City of London chief superintendent, Kevin Hurley, praised Scientology for raising the spiritual wealth of society during the opening of its headquarters in 2006. Last year, a video praising Scientology emerged featuring Ken Stewart, another of the City of London's chief superintendents, although he is not a member of the group.
What is spiritual wealth?
Whoa!
Because the only wealth that I'm aware of Scientology actually improving is their own.
Their bank accounts.
Yes. What is spiritual wealth? What does spiritual even mean? This buzzword that people are tossing around, oh, it's, I'm not religious, I'm spiritual. Oh, great. let's take one nonsensical word and replace it with another.
Right.
You haven't actually told me a damn thing about what it is that you're talking about.
Oh, well, it's kind of, you know, the human spirit. It's well, what human spirit? Are you talking metaphorically? Are you talking about just human character? What we do? How we feel? I mean, because I don't see any reason to apply the word spiritual to any of that. They're all real. They're all manifestations of who we are and what we do. But I don't think that... It's not just a matter of let's not put a supernatural label on it. It's a matter of let's not lump these things together and refer to them as one spiritual entity, because that can only be metaphoric, and all it can do is muddy the waters as we try and investigate what's really going on in human beings. It's, you know, it's a nonsense word. It's an excuse.
I don't have a copy of the story, but I really want to hit this autism thing.
Go.
Go for it.
A Catholic church is in the news right now because there's a family who went to Mass there for several years, and they have a son who's autistic. Now, the church has banned that family from the Mass. They have a restraining order, and the family went on Mother's Day to the church, and the cops came and took them away, and so now there's this big controversy there. Now, this is a situation where I'm going to have to very strongly side with the church. The kid was autistic. He was very disruptive. He would make loud noises. He would urinate in church. He hit people now and then. He often had to be physically restrained. His parents would have to sit on him.
Good grief.
Right. And the family is getting a lot of support from disability advocates and things like that because it is a pretty unfortunate situation. And this is a case where the family is doing something harmful. The church is not a good thing for that kid.
Or any kid, I'd say.
But,
you know, that's just
you're putting him in an environment where you're having to physically restrain him. That's obviously detrimental. Maybe that shouldn't be your highest priority. And the church is getting a lot of flack, but they made several efforts to accommodate.
Right.
They said, well, come to this Mass. It's less crowded. You can sit in the back. No problem. They tried to make several different arrangements, all of which the family rejected.
Yeah.
They want him to be treated like any other kid.
Sounds like purely a logistical issue, you know?
They want him to be treated like anyone else, and he's not going to be.
From a legal point of view and a practical point of view, I also side with the church.
Right.
From an ethical point of view, I think I also side with the church. From a religious point of view... Why don't they just pray and ask God to heal this kid?
Right.
I mean, didn't
God for?
Didn't God create him this way? Isn't he one of God's loved creatures?
Mm-hmm.
Shouldn't he have just as much access to the kingdom of God and God's word from these ministers as anybody else in those pews? Your hypocrisy is showing. Yes, legally, ethically, logistically, practically, you're in the right. He's a disruption. You're trying to accomplish something. You are a public, you know, you wouldn't tolerate this in other public areas. I realize they're a private organization, so they have some rights about who they can exclude, but it's also a building that's open to the public. Under all those things, the church is absolutely right, but you're still a bunch of fucking hypocrites.
Right. Would Jesus exclude him? Would Jesus not heal him?
Well, the problem could be, I think this is in Michigan or Minnesota, somewhere fairly north. So there's no herd of pigs readily accessible to cast the demons into, and no cliff to throw them off of.
There is a swine shortage, ladies and gentlemen. We have nowhere to cast our demons, and therefore we must ban the autistic children from the service. Thank you.
And once you get them in the pigs, then you have to find a body of water to drive them into it, don't you?
But I mean, I've been thrown out of churches for medical issues, and it's one of those things where reasonable accommodation has to be reasonable.
It was that urination problem, right?
Yeah.
I don't get thrown out of churches.
Let's just say that a lot of people spit the Eucharist out that day.
Okay.
I not only don't get thrown out of churches, I get invitations to churches and warm welcomes when I'm there. And, oh, boy, do those people love that. The last church I went to, I kid you not, I just sat in the back. I always go. I don't make any kind of scene. I just go to listen to what the guy's saying and to find out what's happening from pulpits and maybe to have a little conversation with people. And, of course, this church was a Baptist church, and one of the things that they do is they run around, and while they're singing and while the music's playing before the sermon, they'll greet everybody, and you do the hugging and the handshaking and the introductions, and of course they know immediately who the visitors are, and so everybody is just so nice, and they come up and welcome me, and you know, and every now and then one of them will say, "So, do you have a regular church?" No. You know, because they're trying to get you to become a member and transfer your mm-hmm. membership letter, et cetera. And, but most of the time, there's never any problem. Occasionally, I've been recognized once in church, but the guy knew I was coming. But occasionally, somebody else will say, not just, do you have a regular church? But, you know, do you know Jesus?
No.
Would you like to introduce us? Have you met my friend Jesus? No. Where is he? You can't see him. What do you mean I can't? What do you mean I can't see him? Well, he died, but he lives. Did they have like jumper cables or something? Did they hook him up to his nipples and shock him? Oh, was zombie Jesus?
He died.
So occasionally we'll get into the. A little bit of witnessing during the sermon, but mostly they're just...
I can't remember. What was the name of that serum in Reanimator?
No, I don't know.
Please. I don't know if we've got...
Want to get into
that
one?
Oh, yes.
Go for it.
Yes. Woohoo! I enjoy this story so much that I'm tempted to try and adopt some kind of accent for it. Brian, Texas. A minister from a Dallas area Baptist megachurch was caught in an internet sex sting and charged with online solicitation of a minor. Undercover officers posing as a 13-year-old girl, communicated with Joe Barron, aged 52, of Plano for about 2 weeks. Uh-huh. The online conversations were sexual in nature, police said. On May 6th, Barron suggested meeting the girl in person. He suggested that.
Whoa.
He eventually made the nearly 200-mile drive to Bryan, Texas on Thursday, where he was arrested.
Now, he was just going to get her a nice chocolate shake or something, wasn't he?
Well, that may have been what some of us might have suspected if it hadn't been for the transcripts. But the big thing is that police said they found a webcam and condoms in his car.
Oh, well, I guess this chocolate sundae's out then.
Barron remained in Brazos County Jail on Friday on $7,000 bail. Police did not know if he had an attorney. Barron is one of 40 ministers at Prestonwood Baptist Church, one of the largest churches in the country with 26,000 members. He ministers to married adults.
Well, and not little children, married children.
Hey, here's an idea. Let's make sure this prick always ministers to married adults and keep him away from the little girls.
Now, what's this with the bail? 7,000?
Well,
I don't know what's usual in a case like this.
I don't either. I don't think I necessarily have a problem with that because they tend to set bail based on the damage that's been done.
And, of course, he did no damage, really.
He was just being a sick pervert.
Mm-hmm.
There was no actual 13-year-old girl involved.
Right, right.
It was just police pretending to be a 13-year-old girl. So, I mean, I guess there is...
But we know his predilection.
Yeah. It's... This is one of those cases where I'm more than happy that we found somebody who would have potentially done harm.
And yes, now he can
there
get
are
some
still
help.
Problems with this, though. And I want to be fair. And I think Schilling was probably getting ready to hit some of the problems with this.
Most likely.
But let me give a whack at it real quick.
I was going to make a married couple joke, though.
Oh.
Where he's about to go. He can only minister to married couples in the state of California now.
Ah, yes.
Ah.
And we'll get to that. Here's the thing. I'm generally opposed to... No, not generally. I'm completely opposed to thought crime legislation.
Thought crime, yes.
If you have an attraction to little girls and you never take any action upon that apart from, you know, sitting at home and covering yourself in jelly and fantasizing... congratulations. It's nobody's business but yours.
Right.
I would hope that you would be able to realize that this is not acceptable behavior and perhaps not normal behavior, and you might want to look into what's going on there.
Yeah.
But it's your brain.
Sure.
And nobody else has any business in there. If officers go undercover and pretend to be a 13-year-old, there is an element of entrapment involved in the case.
Yeah.
But I'd want to see the transcripts before I made any kind of decision. Because if you're just... If the 52-year-old man who thinks he's talking to a 13-year-old girl is the one who directs and leads the conversation towards that illicit conversation, okay, bust him.
Right.
But if... The 13-year-old starts dropping hints after just innocent, non-sexual conversation that she's attracted to older men, that mommy and daddy are out of town for the weekend. Okay, now you're leading him down a primrose path that I don't think I don't think it carries the same weight, and I don't think it's the same problem.
Right, right.
In this case,
I certainly hope the judge, the lawyers, and
yeah,
and there's
those
also
involved,
a bit to be said for
keep a watch on that
genuinely hitting it off. If he's talking to an adult who's posing as a child, he's still talking to an adult. So there could be a genuine chemistry there that creates something of an extenuating circumstance.
As reluctant as I would normally be to say so, I'll agree with that. The big thing, though, is that this guy took the next step.
Mm-hmm. Right.
He got a webcam and condoms and jumped in a car and drove 200 miles to go hook up with a 13-year-old.
At that point, it's no longer a thought crime.
Yes. You've crossed the line from thought crime to actually demonstrating your intent and willingness to do something.
Mm-hmm.
And we don't have to wait for you to actually rape the 13-year-old. We can get you beforehand, even if there's not a real 13-year-old involved.
Right. I have kind of mixed feelings on it. The condoms... sort of help the case.
No, they don't.
I mean the case for the state.
Oh, okay.
Because there are a lot of situations.
For a minute, I thought you were going to say at least he was going to be safe. Let's cut him a break.
God, no.
Okay, I misheard.
No.
They
help the state's case. The thing is, a lot of these things end up being, to a degree, a catch and release.
Yeah.
The case they make is so precarious, and it's you could argue that that's harmful because you're just putting them back out there, but you could also argue that it's helpful because it's put them in a spotlight. It's made everyone aware.
We put the fear of God into it,
and now they're scared. Yeah.
But there are a lot of situations. This happened with that dumbass perverted justice Brian Williams crap. Chris Hansen. Sorry. Where you have some Christian who goes to the house to meet the girl. He doesn't have anything on him. And when they catch him, he says, well, I was here to minister to her.
Yeah.
And that's something where the state's putting itself in a reasonably precarious position. Usually, like with perverted justice, when NBC used to do that, they would often have the person posing as the minor suggest alcohol or suggest, you know, things to that would help solidify the case. And that's definitely entrapment.
Yeah. Well, see, the thing is that that's actually – I actually find that almost plausible.
Right.
That there are people out there – okay, if you're listening, raise your hand if you've ever seen any child porn. It's not that it's so pervasive that you can't possibly avoid it. In the way things are, you're on the internet, you're probably going to see a picture at some point or another that is underage somewhere, especially since age lines are drawn a little bit differently. In some European countries, you know, like they don't have to be 18.
Right.
Even to be in magazines and stuff. It would qualify as child pornography in the United States. It wouldn't there. But we've all seen, I don't want to say all, as these stories come up, and pages link to pages, they'll show maybe a blurred example of some child porn or whatever. There are people who, out of honest, serious concern about the issue, have gone out to research this. And one of the things that happens, and I've seen several stories about people doing this, is they'll go out and try to infiltrate the people who are spreading around the child porn in whatever chat rooms or whatever they're doing it. And so they'll get child porn on their machine.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, because they're actually trying to find out what's going on and stop this, they look like another one of the people spreading it. And so they'll end up getting arrested with a bunch of child porn on their machine. And they'll say, I'm not into this. I was, trying to help out. Maybe they were telling the truth. Maybe they're being sincere. And maybe the guy who showed up at the girl's house really was trying to minister to her. Maybe he was trying to say, I wanted you to see me face to face so that I could explain that what you're doing on the internet, putting yourself out there to older men, is in danger. It's endangering you. I could be a rapist. I could be a murderer. I could be anybody. And you just invited me over to your house. I mean, it's something that somebody could legitimately do with nothing but the best intentions. In general, though, I don't buy it.
Right.
The right thing to do, if you were in that situation and you were trying to minister to girls, is once they gave you the address, you call the police or their parents.
Right.
I don't the absurdity of going over there in person.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, were you just really going to check out how hot they were? I mean, it's crazy. There are right ways and wrong ways to do things. And if you're going to infiltrate and try and put a stop to child porn rings, you don't actually have to collect it on your machine. It doesn't have to stay there. You're not collecting evidence.
Right.
All you need to do is find out who you're talking to. This person's distributing it. Make a note. Send it immediately to the FBI. I guarantee you the FBI is not going to go and tell that person that you're
right.
They're not going to put your name out as the infiltrator. But the best thing to do is to not get involved in that area and leave it to the experts, because you're only asking for trouble.
Yes.
It's insane.
Wow.
But in this case, we have yet another preacher.
Yep.
Who's perverted and looking to hook up with young girls.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I guess he never read the Ten Commandments.
There's no commandment against...
supposed to make you a better person.
There's no commandment against having sex with young girls.
It's completely moral.
I know all 30 of them. Actually, I know all 645 of them.
Yeah.
No, I don't. That's a lie. I don't have all of them memorized. But so maybe there is one. And thou shalt not, you know, solicit internet sex from 13-year-olds.
Yeah.
I mean, given the stupidity and inanity of some of the other commandments, that would have been a good one. And if that actually appeared there, you know, I am the Lord thy God, thou shalt not solicit sex over the internet with 13-year-olds. It wouldn't even have made sense till now, and it would have been this huge prediction that might have actually offered some evidence that a God exists. So not only is your God too stupid to write commandments that actually protect people, but he missed a golden opportunity to make a prediction that would demonstrate his own existence.
Well, there's the logistical problem of translation. But
yeah, it's true. We might have gotten it all wrong, and we might think that the internet is a series of tubes. Oh, wait.
Well, I'm running out of stuff.
I got some emails that I can kind of paraphrase.
Yeah.
This is from Evan. I'm making a way. My name's Evan. I found your wonderful podcast late last year. I'm making my way through the archive episodes while keeping up with each new release. Very informative and interesting. Please keep up the good work. If it wasn't for shows like yours, I'd feel quite alone.
Oh, you don't have to read all the fawning.
That's the whole email. No, actually, that's the part that I was going to skip, except that I wanted to get his name. I feel as though a brief introduction of my path to atheism is appropriate. My family is religious, and it's rather therapeutic to be able to openly and honestly share my thoughts with someone. I grew up in a Christian home, but started to question it early in life. My love of philosophy grew from a freshman course I took in college, Intro to Philosophy. It sounds small and insignificant, but it really taught me how to think critically. We had a paper due every class period. Each paper was on a different topic, such as love, lying, beauty, art, etc. And we had to analyze our beliefs on each one of them.
Wow, that's cool.
It began
Intro to Philosophy course, it's useful?
Yeah. I'll have to sign up for that. It began my process of questioning everything to find the truth rather than taking everything unquestionably. So after that class, I started to question the big one, my Christianity. I took social psych, which examined social influence in reference to developing our understanding of the world and how humans try to maintain those beliefs even in the face of overwhelming evidence. Then it was on to psychology of religion, which focused on the evolution of religion from prehistory to now and how social influence totally dictates the particular faith to which a person subscribes. I'm not sure that totally applies, but it might, because social influence is really kind of broad.
Right, and I do support the idea that there's a biological influence there, because they've done those studies that show that the portion of the brain that not necessarily controls, but is most affected by spiritual thought, that differs significantly from person to person. And they haven't done enough studies to really have a population they can extrapolate on, but the indication so far is that the greater a person's religiosity, the greater those receptors are in that area of the brain. So there's a biological component.
Yeah, it's one of those things where, you know, we would never go so far as to say it's completely genetic, but we must always recognize that we are very much subject to our genes.
Of course.
Right, and that's also not to say that it in any way justifies a religious belief, because we're also programmed to see, to anthropomorphize damn near everything we see.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, you know.
And we're self-aware. We realize that we're anthropomorphizing things.
Right.
But, I mean, we don't always realize the impact of even small things that are genetic. For example, you know, I was genetically predispositioned to have brown hair. Until it started going away. And that is one aspect of a causal chain. I was treated differently than people who had red hair and freckles. You know, it all melts together into this soup that is impossible to properly analyze, but you can still look at it and get a sense of it.
Right. Too many variables, but there's a certain average thing. You know, averages pop out.
We may not be able to define specifically, this is beautiful, and yet we all have a good understanding of what's beautiful. And it differs from each of us, but there are some situations where, in general, we would all look at someone or something and say, this is definitely beautiful, and something else and say, this is definitely not.
Right.
Averages and trends.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway, to continue with his letter, after that, it was all over. I now see religion as a totally human phenomenon with no divine touch, no higher revelation. It was simply the best method early humans had to understand the world around them, and today it's evolved into something much more sophisticated and sinister, but it is essentially the same. While listening to your show, I've noticed several times you mentioned you're working on a book concerning a wide range of epistemological inquiries. I'm going to pause the letter there. Let's not keep bringing up the book. It is being worked on, and I just redid what I hope is the final outline Wednesday at work while I was waiting for an image to finish. So it's still going, but I wasted some I wasted a lot of time, and I have a lot of stuff going on. So.
Epistemology does not mean you're pissing on logic.
So anyway, I wrote him back thanking him for the letter, and what he did was he recommended a book, and I want to make sure I get the book recommendation out. Yeah. I haven't ordered it because, it's price prohibitive right now. The book is called, I think it's called The Social Animal, but I'm not finding it in the letter. Crap.
Should be in there somewhere.
The author is Aronson. I found that. It's just the formatting. Oh, The Social Animal is the name of the book. And the author's last name is Aronson. I'm not going to find it, so I'm not going to keep pinging on it. But it's an actual psychology or sociology, textbook. And it's like $55 at Amazon. So I'm holding off for now.
Cool.
This individual wrote us, and hello, let me start off by saying that I'm a regular listener to your podcast. I listen to you guys in order to be exposed to worldviews that are completely different from mine and which I disagree with. Cool.
Yeah.
Russell does that a lot. He listens to Christian radio. I do that a lot in the sense that I have really lengthy email exchanges with believers. I spend a great deal of time reading and doing Bible studies and apologetic studies, probably more than any sane, rational person should.
Oh, I know how getting into exchanges can just devour time.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
But I can appreciate anybody, no matter what their position is on an issue, who's interested enough in the subject and in the conversation to do this.
Yeah.
So with that said, I find your show to be very entertaining and all of you to be highly intelligent. Well, thank you. The fact that you've made that observation means that you're probably highly intelligent as well.
We'd like to think so.
Hopefully James will laugh at that. I'd like to ask all of you a question in regards to how the mind operates in relation to whether or not we have souls. Okay, now first of all, what on earth makes you think that any of us know how the mind operates?
Yeah.
No,
we'll offer guesses.
My question is not intended to persuade you in any way. I only wish to get your response, thoughts in this matter. So what I did was I took his actual question and pointed out where I agreed and where I disagreed. This is the reason that I'm happy about this letter is because I constantly say on the TV show, tell me what you believe and why. I don't care what you claim to know. Let's just chuck knowledge out as irrelevant to the discussion. Tell me what you believe and why you believe it. In particular, why you think I should also believe it. And in doing so, I will tell you what I agree with, what I disagree with, and why. And then a letter like this comes in, and it's the perfect opportunity to do exactly that. So he says, if a person is only a physical entity without a soul, then our thoughts and wills are comprised only of natural processes that occur in the brain.
Absolutely.
Please correct me if I'm wrong here. And I said, I don't find any flaw there.
Right.
Next, if our thoughts and wills are only the result of natural processes in the brain, then all of our reasoning and decision are only the result of physical and environmental stimulation of the chemical electrical reactions in our brain. And I said, okay, I'm generally fine with that statement as well.
Yeah.
Then it gets to where he connects the dots. If that is the case, then thinking would be the result of only our environment rather than an understood set of methods and rules, i.e. logic. However, men are clearly seen to use logic in order to make decisions or argue ideas. How, then, is the use of logic consistent with people being only physical entities? The problem here is that he's talking about, on the one hand, what the brain, how the brain works, and on the other hand, what the brain does.
Right, right.
And my answer was, because your statement that thinking would be the result of only our environment is wrong. You're ignoring the brain's function. The brain doesn't just receive input and store it. It also processes input, constructs a model of reality, and makes decisions. It's complex and difficult to study from the perspective of being in it.
Right.
But it is, and this is where I'm going to kind of depart from what I
wrote
back.
It's a machine that does all that stuff.
The logic is the process of analyzing that information.
Right.
It is how the brain goes about sorting that and making a decision. The brains that are better in this area are more likely to survive. In simpler organisms, the brain may be so limited that it's unable to adapt to change. There's a great example of this, the digger wasp. And I looked and looked and looked online for a video, and I could not find a video of this, even though I know I watched one just a month or so ago. Essentially, the wasp behavior is pretty much pre-programmed. It'll bring food back to its nest, set it down, check the nest, go back to the food, and then drag it in. If you move the food just a little bit, it pauses and tries to find the food. If it can, it doesn't just drag it and bring it back to the nest. It starts at the point where it thinks it's just set the food down. So it goes back down and checks the nest and then comes back out to get the food. You can, and people have, keep the wasp occupied for a long time by constantly moving the food. It's stuck in a rigid step-by-step procedure to accomplish a goal. Store food for babies or later or whatever.
It's programmed.
This is this process, this the pre-programming, is evidently sufficient to ensure that this species continues to survive. However, a brain that is only slightly better would be much more efficient and effective. A brain that says, aha, there's the food, I've already checked the nest, let me take it on in, would be an improvement. I don't want to type several volumes, so let me cut to the chase. Brains have a job, process information in such a way that it makes the entire organism more likely to survive and reproduce. You can do this with simple routine instructions, as with the wasp, but a brain that can adapt to changes, make decisions, alter behavior, and find better solutions is preferable to ones following a limited routine. Your question then, how then is the use of logic consistent with people being only physical entities, is best addressed as follows. What reason do you have for asserting that logical thought is in any way inconsistent with a naturalistic reality? What is it about logic and reasoning that makes you think something else is required?
Right. Logic is just merely a model of reality.
Yeah, your question, though thoughtful and nicely phrased, isn't fundamentally different from other arguments from personal incredulity. If we have no soul, how do you explain consciousness? Without a soul, how can we have logic? It's like the transcendental argument for the existence of God, which I keep meaning to refute for the Atheist Experience blog, and I just haven't had time. I'm not ducking it, but it is fairly absurd. But I understand where the person's coming from, because these are the big questions, yes. The ones that are difficult, the ones that we may not have answers to now or ever. But that's the thing. If you don't have an answer, you don't get to just make one up.
Right.
And you don't get to leap to a panacea, catch-all answer that seems to solve the problem when it has no explanatory power. How's logic work in the brain if we don't have a soul? What on earth makes a soul relevant to the discussion at all?
Mm-hmm.
How is a soul, the possession of one, in any way relevant to whether or not the brain processes steps logically?
Yep.
Well, fallacies help illustrate it. If logic is the process that the brain uses, collectively, we've come to a certain consensus on where those processes can go wrong. Not everyone does the same process with information. That's why we have certain logical fallacies. People will believe this because it's intuitive and it makes sense to them. But as a consensus, we can see that it hasn't worked. It's shown itself to be flawed. And so we come up with labels for logical fallacies to help correct where things go wrong. Now, if you have a soul, and that's where logic comes from, you'd have to be able to justify the amount of logical fallacies, how easy they are to believe, and the different processes that different people use to interpret information.
Yeah. And going back to the first letter that I read, he actually addresses this a little bit. This is some of the stuff you're going to find in The Social Animal by Elliot Aronson. His theory is that humans are cognitive misers. We're always trying to conserve our cognitive energy because our brains are not omniscient. This makes it impossible to think critically about each and every bit of information we experience and about each and every decision that we make.
Right.
This leads us to create strategies or heuristics to quickly process this large amount of information. As Aronson explains, quote, we accomplish this by ignoring some information to reduce our cognitive load, or we overuse other information to keep from having to search for more, or we may be willing to accept a less than perfect alternative because it's almost good enough. It is critical to realize that our shortcuts can produce biases and prejudices that obscure the truth.
That's really good.
Yeah. This is something I've kind of harped on in the past and a little bit on the other show, you know, not just in the I care whether or not my beliefs are true, but his comment that we accept less than perfect alternatives because it's good enough. We have shortcuts in language.
Oh, yeah.
We make assumptions about, you know, we don't even often think, most of us, about where these words came from. Take the word surprise. It hit me today.
Uh-huh.
What the hell does it really mean? I mean, we all know what it means.
Yeah.
But could you put together
something? You are presented with the unexpected. That is what surprise.
You cannot. It's difficult, or at least effortful. Effortful? That's another language shortcut that I'm assuming all of you will understand because I'm fucking stupid. It requires effort to put together a string of words to summarize what that word means.
Mm-hmm.
When even if you'd never read a dictionary definition or attempted to produce a dictionary definition, we would all know what surprise means, and we know it from the context, from the usage, and we get that we are so good at this and we are so effective that we overuse it, as Aronson's pointing out, in that I'm going to make assumptions that when I'm talking about something, you know what I mean. If I say God, I'm assuming that your understanding of God is at least close enough to mine that we're talking about the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
When in fact, we may be talking about something very, very different.
Well, that's one of the problems of talking with theists is that at least, you know, my initial assumptions are so different that I have to, you know, I have to be careful about my assumptions about what they're saying.
Because
they have a different word for everything.
Yeah.
Another example would be non-fractal geometry. We use it because it's a very good approximation, and it's simple and it's quick. You know, if you're constructing something, you use basic Euclidean geometry, mm-hmm. assuming that figures are more exact than they are, and you come up with a solution that is close enough to actually work. And we can use these, we can use non-fractal geometry to explain a hell of a lot of things, to get a lot of points across. Right.
Yeah.
Right. We can do all of that without having to break down every single step and take things as exactly as they actually are.
Because we know that the Platonic solids are fictional. They don't exist.
Right.
And yet we can still make use of them.
Right.
It's this, we're trying to constantly, both in language and in our thought processes, and even in harder sciences, come up with this useful balance between an economy of language and a precision of language,
mm-hmm.
or an economy of ideas and a precision of ideas. And I realize that a precision of ideas is also grammatically incorrect. But
yeah, science isn't so much about...
I was being economical there.
Yes,
finding,
and it works.
Science isn't so much about finding truth as making probabilistic assumptions...
Mm-hmm.
that approach the truth.
Right.
Right. We get as close as we can to it.
Ryan wrote in, a friend forwarded me this email attachment called The God of Science. It's full of BS about how the Bible supposedly made accurate scientific claims
and
before anything was known.
Freaking enormous.
It's nonsense, pretty much start to finish. But I wrote him back and said, thanks for the note. We may talk about this on the show. And so we are.
Maybe we can go check out the birds under the Congress Bridge.
It's all post hoc.
The birds under the Congress Bridge.
Yeah, birds.
That's probably the best.
They're all blackbirds.
That's the best inside joke lately.
But the answer to that is, you know, it's all post hoc rationalization.
Yeah.
Right.
To explain Schilling's joke and to put a pimp out for what the ACA is doing.
Oh, yeah?
Our annual bat cruise is coming up again in September. Austin has one of the largest, if not the largest,
I think it's the largest
urban population of bats, and they live under the South Congress Bridge. Most of them, a good chunk of them, and you can go out and take a boat tour. And in the fall, you go out there around sunset, and all the bats head out for their nightly feed, and you watch it. But of course, the Bible says that bats are birds.
So, right.
I'm pretty sure that I didn't have to explain that to any of our regular listeners, but just in case somebody
I was slow today.
So what I sent him back about this, hey, look at all the stuff the Bible tells us about science and predicted. And I said, the response to this is pretty easy. You can find identical claims about the Quran.
Oh, yeah.
By their logic, then Islam is also correct. Since it's newer, It must be the latest word from the one true God, and Christians should convert. More importantly, even if we ignore the issues of creative interpretation, claims like this are useless for two reasons. One, they weren't discovered until we already knew the answer. What good is that?
Right.
I'm struggling to think of examples, but there are just really, really great points in the Quran where they hit on shit that the rest of the world hadn't thought of. And, it was at the time the Quran was written, that society was very, very advanced in a lot of ways.
The second reason that the claims are useless is even if they clearly stated something like the Earth orbits the sun, it carries absolutely no weight until it's confirmed to be true. How do we confirm it? Science. What does this mean? If they're correct in their interpretation and reasoning, they should convert to Islam. And then follow that up by rejecting all claims until they're supported by evidence and scientifically verifiable, which means they should be atheists until the existence of a God is scientifically demonstrable. Because the fact that an ancient book is in agreement with science on a particular point, interpretive or not, only means that the book is correct on that point. It doesn't mean the book is infallible. It doesn't tell us anything about the authors, and it certainly doesn't confirm divine inspiration or the existence of a God. Science wins every fucking time.
Yep. And I like these the shows that try to explain miracles in scientific terms.
Mm-hmm.
I guess they don't believe in miracles.
Yeah.
It's all just physical processes did this.
When Jesus walked on water, the thermal properties of the water were slightly modified to form a rather thin layer of ice that had a structure.
Never mind. Yeah.
It's
like, well, you removed the noumenon.
Here's a thought. Maybe he never walked on water at all.
Yep. Maybe it's all horse hockey.
Before we go spending a whole lot of time and energy and effort and money trying to explain something, why don't we find out if it ever fucking happened?
You know, I don't like to compare it to fandom, but, it seems more and more the behavior of the deeply religious is like they're all getting together in their church to talk about Star Wars,
Right.
It makes as much sense, right? You know our particular interpretation of Darth Vader's attitudes towards this is correct. So we have our own church that believes Darth Vader thinks this, and we don't like that other church down the street.
And every once in a while,
Darth Vader
beat the shit out
thinks
of
your
Trekkies.
Lack of faith is disturbing.
Do you have the news story where Darth Vader got arrested?
No.
There is a Jedi church. There is a Jedi church, and
and Darth Vader got arrested.
Yeah, he came in and started some trouble at the Jedi church. You can Google it. It's in the news of the weird stories. And
that's awesome because that's just a microcosm. That's a nutshell of religion right there.
Before we close, and since we started roughly on time, we're just about done. But before we get out of here, there's one news story that I want to close out the show with because I get to do my favorite joke of the week. But quickly, as a reminder, if you're in the Austin area, be sure and hit the ACA website, www.atheist-community.org. Mm-hmm. There's information up about the summer solstice party. There's information up or getting ready to be posted about the Bat Cruise in September. Plenty of other ways, stuff going on, ways for you to communicate with us. Also, while the ACA has not officially signed on yet to participate, Joe Zemecki, Texas Director of American Atheists, in conjunction with a number of free thought groups around Texas, are putting together something that hasn't quite been named, but one of the names, which I'm kind of leaning towards, is either Texas Free Thought Fiesta or Texas Atheist Convention. Basically, we're trying to get every secular group in Texas to meet up here in Austin sometime around October. I think he's got a venue or getting a venue. There's a Yahoo group for it. I know there's more information coming. And I know he's posted a video, and I'm sure he'll post a lot more.
Wow.
If you're listening and you're in Texas or, close enough to Texas, I don't care. If you're in the UK and you want to come for the Texas Atheist Organization or Australia, I was going to talk about how miserably hot it was the other day and how we're entering summer, and then I realized, that's only for listeners who are in the Northern Hemisphere.
Right.
And for my friends in Australia and other places in the Southern Hemisphere, I guess it's starting to get colder. And I need to be, you know, I need to give a wave out because I have some people who've been from Australia in particular who've been extremely supportive, both in sending me information. One of them sent me a link to the video that I talked about earlier. I know they have like Skeptics in the Pub nights, and some of them are going to TAM 6,
right.
Which is coming up this month or coming up in June, and I can't go. I wish I could.
Yeah, we're being overwhelmed by our cognitive function, so we have to limit some of the facts that we accept, and so the southern northern hemisphere thing just sort of slips through the cracks.
Yeah, you know, from my perspective, we're heading into summer. If you're heading into fall, send me a plane ticket because it's really getting hot.
Yes,
no, I love Austin. It never gets too bad. So let's do no. You've got a news story.
Do I?
From Cali.
Yeah. While he's looking for that.
No.
If you're also just coming through, feel free to drop by any of our events. This last week, we had a podcast listener who came by happy hour. We've had a few people just drift in and out who, you know, they're here on business or they're Austin's in the middle of some travel they're doing and they stop by. That's always great.
Yeah, I couldn't make it this Thursday. I'd just been working too much and I was exhausted.
But oddly, this Thursday was dead.
Really?
It had the lightest turnout we've ever had of about 7. We've been averaging around 20.
Yeah, we've been hitting close to 20. And that's
I don't know what happened this week, but
you know, just for a weeknight, let's sit out at on the porch at the pub and have something to drink and food. Hey, 20 is a pretty good turnout for a Thursday.
Yeah. How hot was it?
Thursday was kind of warm during the day. Yeah. I imagine it cooled off a little bit.
Yeah.
So if you were the listener who showed up Thursday, I'm sorry I didn't get down there to meet you. So, Dennis, what's our last story?
Well, kind of a big one.
Really?
Yeah. There's this huge area of land on the extreme western end of the United States.
Arizona Bay? Not yet.
Not yet. California, well, once, I think, named after the
Californication?
Vegetable. Yeah.
Once God gets wind of it, we will have Arizona Bay.
Yes.
Named after the cauliflower. California has a California ban on same-sex marriage struck down. The California Supreme Court struck down the state's ban on same-sex marriage Thursday, saying sexual orientation like race or gender does not constitute a legitimate basis upon which to deny or withhold legal rights.
So when I first saw this story, it was actually slightly before the announcement, and the headline was a little deceptive because the headline just said Supreme Court expected to rule on same-sex marriage. And I was like, I didn't even know that the Supreme Court was hearing a case on that. And then about 2 hours later, the same news service, and I can't remember who it was, just said Supreme Court shoots down same-sex marriage ban. And I was like,
the whole country?
What bizarro universe am I living in? That this Supreme Court actually managed to shoot it down. I mean, you know, did these guys have a moment of clarity? But, of course, it's California's Supreme Court.
But reading this story, I was just struck by the beauty and clarity of the language. It was like, you know, in a 4-3, 120-page ruling issue, the justices wrote that responsibility to care for and raise children does not depend upon the individual's sexual orientation. We therefore conclude that in view of the substance and significance of the fundamental constitutional right to form a family relationship, the California Constitution properly must be interpreted to guarantee this basic civil right to all Californians, whether gay or heterosexual, and to same-sex couples as well as to opposite-sex couples. Chief Justice Ronald George wrote for the majority. The ruling takes effect in 30 days.
Yeah, and of course, there's already a huge group of people trying to stop this. They want to get a constitutional amendment on the ballot for November, and they've asked for an injunction so that people can't get married until this is voted on in November. I hope that injunction gets shot down, because guess what? Your Constitution allows this. It's been ruled upon, and you just sat back and didn't think that nobody could possibly do this. And now, by law, these people should be allowed to marry. And if you don't know what the outcome of that vote's going to be in November, and their argument is, well, if we allow a whole bunch of same-sex marriages to take place now, and then we ban them in November with the election, what do we do with all those people that are married?
Right.
Well, I don't know. Maybe you shouldn't fucking ban it in November.
Right, there's no place for an injunction, because an injunction would be deciding whether or not it should be legal. And at this point, it absolutely is legal. They're just trying to change the law, which is a completely different matter.
You're trying to prohibit something that's legal. But here's the thing is, yes, that's going to be a sticky pickle for you, no pun intended, if you have a whole bunch of same-sex marriages take place, and then the bigots in your state get together to vote to make that illegal. Well, here's another problem. Maryland already allows it.
Yep.
And the Constitution of the United States is such that a marriage in one state has to be recognized by other states. So now we're getting into this fuzzy little area of states' rights.
Huh?
See,
how are we going to resolve this?
I tell you how we're going to resolve it. We're going to keep pushing forward until the Supreme Court says, congratulations, anybody can marry anybody, anywhere. Get over it.
Yep. Because that's where it's all heading. That's where it is inevitably.
So Ellen and Portia are getting married. And my favorite announcement of the week, set phasers on stunning. Sulu is getting married. That was my favorite joke of the week.
That's cool.
And there's probably going to be a lot more of this. This is an issue, and we've got the Pride Festival coming up. The ACA typically has a booth down there, and we will again this year. It's not an atheism issue. I do think it's a church-state separation issue.
Yes, absolutely.
I do think it's a human rights issue, a civil rights issue. I don't understand. We have a secular government, a secular constitution, despite what you Christians may think, where there's no religious test for public office, where we have freedom of religion, we have freedom of speech, freedom of expression. I don't know why the government's in the marriage business in the first place, but as long as it is, it shouldn't be allowed to discriminate.
Right.
And please give me a secular justification that would eliminate same-sex couples or prevent same-sex couples from being married, yet allow heterosexual couples or mixed-sex couples to be married. No such thing exists. Somebody gave me, I used to say, give me a secular argument against gay marriage. And some people gave me that argument. But their argument...
It's against nature.
No. The secular argument is that they think marriage is a bad thing, and letting more people marry, whether it's same-sex or other, only exacerbates problems.
Right.
Congratulations, you're opposed to marriage. What I want is an argument that says, given that we allow people to marry, what's the justification for excluding this particular scenario?
Yeah.
But anyway... Cali's on the march. There's going to be havoc in the streets. Cats sleeping with dogs, and
it's weird, you know. It seems like it's all a big mess right now. You know, here we take a couple of steps forward. Here we take a couple of steps back.
Yeah.
It's mixing up. We don't know what's going to happen next. We need a clear direction, but until then. They're done. They would be back in 2 weeks, but instead, they'll be back in 3 weeks with another episode. Until then, they remain Dennis Lube, Matt Dillahunty.
See you then.
Schilling.
Yes.
And they leave with No Escape from Heaven by Curve. We'll be right back.